Thank you, Jennifer. The readings I chose today start in the 19th century and then the 20th century. And the same way with the music, started in the 19th century, the 20th, and we will end with a hymn from the 21st century. Perhaps because it's Columbus Day, perhaps because it's exactly 28 years ago today that I gave my first sermon at the Unitarian Church of Barnstable. But I'm thinking about the changes we've been through. Sometimes it feels as though we're living in another country. So today I want to take you on a journey from the past and into the future, from living just in the mind and body to living in the spirit and in the heart. Where were you in 1961? That is the year that the Unitarians and the Universalists merged. Perhaps you were not yet a twinkle in your parents' eye. Now that's an old phrase. That was 53 years ago. The average age of Unitarian Universalists is 63. So we've seen a lot of water flow under the bridge. When we were younger, it seemed that flow was gentle. We talked of taking a slow boat to China. Now we need to negotiate the rapids, and China is a world power. John F. Kennedy took office as the President of the United States in 1961. Since then, we fought a war in Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson led us into the Great Society and signed the Civil Rights Act. Three of our national leaders were assassinated. President Nixon and his Vice President Agnew resigned in disgrace. For the only time in our nation's history, we had a president and a vice president who were not elected to those offices. We failed to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, but the UUA made an historic leap in the early 70s by empowering women within our denomination. The first indications of power of oil-producing nations resulted in gas lines. Americans were held hostage in Iran. We opted to bury our heads in the sand, choosing a new morning in America under Reagan, who quickly removed the solar panels from the White House that Carter had installed. We would go back to that sand many times in the years to follow. Desert Storm and the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. The 9/11 attacks remind us that this land of good and plenty is not loved by everyone. And now we find that it is not only countries that can declare war, but bands of people with a determination to eliminate what they do not approve of. As the rest of the world caught up with us and our own working people forgot the lessons of joining together to balance the power of the wealthy, as we spent more of our income on buying weapons, as the financiers found another way to dupe the public into giving them more and getting less back, we have become more and more like those nations that once sought to emulate us. That is how our actual country became like another country to us. And that's just the macroscopic view. In our personal lives, social mores have changed. From the pill in 1962 to marriage equality, from no-fault divorce to cohabitation, from employee benefits and pensions to 401ks and take your chances on the stock market for retirement. In 1970, women made up 31% of the workforce. Now it's 47%. And many women are now not only the bread makers in their home, but also the only breadwinners. Two and often three incomes or more are required just to make ends meet. There's no free TV anymore. Telephones that once hung on a wall are now carried in our pockets, and they take photos and act as mini computers, which have replaced the building size ENIAC. In spite of being able to connect in so many technical ways, most of us have no one person we feel we can confide in. Perhaps that's because we can always connect online. We forget to connect in person. We ignore those around us as we talk or text to someone else who is also ignoring those around her. Part of feeling like we are in another country is that families have also changed in the last half century. With the advent of the birth control pill came greater freedom for women and for sexual activity. With more women educated and working outside the home with better health care came smaller families. This puts a premium on individual children that was not there before. When infant and child mortality were high, having a large number of children might ensure that some would survive. The cemetery in the church lot behind my home church in Barnstable is quite old, and there are so many children and young women who had just given birth who are on those stones. Although the death of a child is always a grieving matter, parents with a household full of perhaps too many mouths to feed already looked upon the death of one child differently than we do now. With so many people in a family and death so frequent among the young, people viewed death as part of life. Certainly the hope of eternal life also made the death of one loved one less final, as people believed in seeing each other in the afterlife, in heaven. Now, few people still really believe that we live after we die, even though we still talk about seeing someone later on and perhaps still hope for it. Divorce is at 50% of all marriages, and that includes marriages out of the second or third or fourth. Family gatherings at holidays are more stressful as people have to make decisions about who goes where and with whom. Rituals like child dedications, first communions, weddings, funerals, and birthday and anniversary parties have a greater element of disaster pending. And the close communities of the past have been outnumbered by the spacious suburbs of today, with minimum acreage zoning to keep people at a safe distance from their neighbor. My late friend Judy and I often used to roam around Cape Cod towns in the off-season when we could go down roads that were normally off-limits without offending anyone's privacy. And one time when we were in Bourne, we went to Pocasset. There, the bungalows built over 50 years ago were close together with barely the space of a driveway between them. Across the street was the beach and the bay, and they all shared, and any traveler could see it just outside the car window. This was a community that still depended on one another for help and for fun. Neighbors no doubt dropped in, and kids ran around in each other's yards. A little ways south, we came upon Wings Neck, much of which was built closer to the 1980s. There was a road down the center of the peninsula, with narrow roads or driveways leading to trophy homes. The people here did not understand the interdependent web of existence. They thought they had enough money to live apart from others. Only those friends who were invited could come. No drop-ins, another country from the one just up the road. With family and even friends often living at a distance, our sense of community has changed. No more Sunday afternoon visits with the grandparents. They are replaced with ESPN and the sport of the season. Churches are changing too. Most liberal ones have lost members, including Unitarian Universalists. People go to the grocery store or the mall on Sunday because it is the only day they have off from work, or they have nothing else to do. At least they see other people. Our need for human contact has to be met somehow. Churches could fill that need if we knew how to market ourselves better. So the changes to work, families, friendships, communities, sometimes make us feel that we are in another country, and we sometimes miss the comfort of the old days. It is not a neat package to be a human being these days. There are many questions that were once answered for us and that we now have to answer for ourselves. Just what country we live in is up to us. Just what we believe and how we want to put those beliefs into action in our lives so that our life has meaning and gives us hope through the difficult times is up to us. But how do we maintain our equilibrium and our values as the world changes at breakneck speed? Back in 1986, I had suggested a theme for the UU General Assembly that was to happen in June of 1987 in Little Rock, Arkansas. The locale reminded me of the civil rights defiance in that community. At the time, there was a movement to change our image from being a religion that doesn't believe in certain things, like hell, to one that has positive values. So my theme was, we hold these truths. The UUA didn't adopt this theme, but I'd sent a copy of my rationale for it to my minister, and he asked me to give a sermon on it. And no one's been able to keep me quiet ever since. Just what are our truths as UUs? We have the seven principles, but they're not really about what we believe as individuals. They're supposed to be the foundation on which we function together as a covenanted community of religious societies. But we usually think of them as what we agree on. Perhaps the two principles we find hardest to live by, but which are shared values by most of us, have to do with loving one another and caring for our world. We have a free will. In this new country we now live in, we get to exercise that free will more and more. It is what makes us nervous. Look at all of the brands of cereal, coffee, and just about anything else in the grocery stores. It is what makes us uncomfortable. It's what makes us feel insecure. There's a kind of theology called process theology, which espouses the idea that we are continually changing and that so too is God. This is what the word process in this context means. And it informs us that we have to move beyond the ideas of the past. Recently, the Congregational Church, it's an independent congregational church in Yarmouthport near where I live, had a sign that said, "Our God doesn't change." And I felt sorry for them. It informs us we have to move beyond the ideas of the past that we need to see humanity as progressing, just like the cosmos. Scientists no longer think that the universe is expanding and that it will reach a maximum point when it will contract and implode, and then we'll have another big bang. That was the theory for some time. Now scientists have found that the universe is expanding into infinity. There is no limit. And it's not expanding from one point, a center, but it's expanding from every point in the universe. It's a little hard to get our heads around that one. I like to simplify it and think of it as throwing a handful of pebbles into a pond. And they make many ripples from where each of those pebbles go. I also like to think of this as a model for the love in our hearts. Every person whom we love loves others, and the ripples of love extend and keep expanding to more and more people. But to live this kind of belief means we have to be willing to change, not only in our belief system, but also in our actions. It means we have to see the world as changing, too, in ways that require us to change. The change in climate is one of these. How do we cope with getting people to change their comfortable habits? I know from my own life experience that as much as I do many things out of positive influence, that is, that I know I will feel better if I do a certain thing, I also know that many times I wait until I realize that if I don't do something soon, there'll be a big price to pay. This is living by threat, by fear, and not by love. And when it comes to the really big decisions of life, I know that I choose them out of love. What I do for a living, whom I love, which church I join, what causes I'm willing to give up my time, my money, and my talents for. So if you are sometime looking around at your life and feeling that you are living in another country, perhaps you are. Travel is a great thing. And if you are feeling a bit uncomfortable, you may heed the advice of a popular broadcaster who said, when you travel, remember that a foreign country is not designed to make you comfortable. It's designed to make its own people comfortable. In our case, it is the young people's country that we are traveling in, and for them, it is all they know. They are comfortable in it. I find it ironic that during a time of history when changes happen in a nanosecond, we as a people are living longer. This makes the changes seem even greater compared to so many years ago. Of course, the alternative is none too good. We do not want to go back to the days when the age of 40 was considered old and when so many did not outlive childhood. But this dual change does make it more difficult for us older folk to deal with the new country we find ourselves in. So we must look to the young, many of whom are reviving the idealism of their grandparents in striving to address social and environmental issues. We are in another country and we are being called to adapt to the climate and the culture and the resources of that new country. The young can give us hope and help us learn a new language, a new cuisine, a new way to think, and a new way to interact. If we remember our seventh principle, that we are connected to one another by the interdependent web of all existence, we will know that there is still something the young need from us. As all countries have their hills and valleys, it is important for the young to be reminded that they are not at the end of their road when the fog rolls in. This experience you have, and you can share it Be there for them in their struggles so that they know that although the road is bumpy, it rises out of the valley eventually. May you enjoy your travels here, and may you help others find their way in this, your new home. And when you are feeling left out of this new country, remember the words of Edwin Markham, who used his wit. He drew a circle that shut me out, heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in. Amen.